May it please the court, I'm Kerry Rogers, attorney registration number 18636. I represent Cole Knave, the son of Chris Knave. I was anticipating that David Calvert was going to be here today as well. He is an attorney who represents Mr. Knave's daughter, Britta Klug. I was under the impression that we had reset this. It was originally set for 2:30, but I think he had intended to allow me to present the argument on both of our on behalf of both of our clients anyway, so I'll proceed if that's permissible. We have a number of disagreements with farmers in this case, and but we have one very fundamental disagreement, and it concerns the interpretation of T. Herrera versus Century, the landmark 2001 Supreme Court case concerning underinsured motorist case. And it really centers, our disagreement centers on farmers' attempt to define an insured as someone occupying a vehicle. We believe that that's just another way of saying that in order to make a UIM claim, you have to be occupying a vehicle. Or that another way to say it is that coverage is following the vehicle there. We believe that's an explicit violation of D. Herrera. D. Herrera was a very significant departure from the previous law, and it said that specifically held that occupancy restrictions of any type, that's the words of the court, of any type, are void as applying to a UIM claim. As I said, the impact of D. Herrera has been that UIM coverage now follows the person, not the automobile.
Mr. Rogers, let me add to this. Assume, for purposes of the question only, that we agree with you that D. Herrera provides some kind of coverage, UIM coverage. And assume also that we agree with you that the definition of insured under this policy doesn't comport with D. Herrera. If we then go to the liability portion of this policy, though, the liability portion of this policy says that a person is covered if they are driving a covered vehicle. So why aren't we simply looking at the discussion for liability purposes and coming to exactly the same conclusion, that there is no coverage because he was not using a covered auto?
Well, Your Honor, I think that you can look at either one of those coverages and determine that that coverage was available. But the fact that they used an occupancy restriction voids that attempt to restrict who is covered.
For occupancy for the UIM.
That's right.
I understand that. Why would it be void if there's occupancy required for liability?
I'm not sure that you ever get to that point if you determine that there's you don't have coverage for the UIM.
But if the UIM then looks, if it says that policy provision is void because it's occupancy based,
that the UIM provision is void.
Yes.
Right.
And then you look to liability coverage according to D. Herrera and Aetna versus McMichael, right?
Well, I think that's only one alternative, Judge. I don't think you have to. I think McMichael, the case you're referring to, McMichael says that anyone who is covered for liability coverage is also entitled to UIM coverage. I don't think that it's a converse relationship where if the UIM coverage is determined to be void, the language of the UIM policy is void, you have to go back and look at liability policy.
Well, then how else do you figure out who is covered under the UIM? There's got to be, it can't be everyone in the world is covered under this UIM policy, so there has to be some limitations. What are they?
Well, I would suggest that you look at D. Herrera for the answer to that question. I think that D. Herrera, which is of course a personal lines policy, not a commercial policy, but I think that it applies to a commercial policy as well.
Well, the problem with D. Herrera is that the young man in question was insured as a resident relative. So there was something that the court had to look at to determine whether he was covered or not.
That's precisely.
What are you suggesting we look at here other than the liability coverage?
That's precisely where I was going with that. In a typical personal lines policy, the insured, it defines coverage that applies to the named insured, and that's usually the head of the household, maybe two people, plus any additional insureds. Those are usually defined as resident relatives or resident family members or something of that nature. That's what we're talking about here, in my opinion, is those additional insureds. And so in a corporate policy...
There's no authority, though, that you've cited or that we can find that indicates in a commercial lines policy you're looking at family members, well, other than the case that you cited, but that was on a specific situation where there was ephemeral coverage.
Well, I think the case you're referring to is probably Hawkeye Security versus Lambrick. And in Hawkeye Security versus Lambrick, you're correct. The court never had to get to the spot where we're at today. But what they did say is they looked at how other states are handling that, and they looked at Florida, or they looked at Tennessee, and they looked at California, and they looked at Ohio, and they based their decision on those other states. And I think it's really worth looking at some of those other states. In particular, Ohio is a very interesting state. Ohio has a law. Ohio's UIM coverage statutes or case law says that when you have a corporate insured, it applies, the coverage, the UIM coverage is illusory. A corporation can't be injured, so it applies to the employees of that corporation.
But those policy provisions were different. In the case that you cited to us, that somebody messed up with putting the coverage together. Here, it's pretty clear that it does cover the corporation, and it covers... It doesn't mention family members except for if you're not a corporation. But I don't think we have to go there. What I'm trying to find out, if this gentleman, the injured party, the deceased here, was ever a covered driver for liability purposes, is there anything in the record that indicates that he ever drove one of the specifically named vehicles?
Yes, there is, Judge.
Where is that in the record?
It's in the statement that Farmers appended to their motion for summary judgment of Justine Cohn. She describes their typical procedure and how they would use these vehicles.
And if I were to look at that, it would show me that Mr. Knave actually drove one of the listed vehicles?
Well, it shows that he would use one of the vehicles, and that's really, that covers your point, I think. I mean, they use these vehicles in a typical manner to protect the person who would walk these barrel lines, she says. And they would, you know, drive back and forth from the job scene to do various jobs.
Problem is that the stipulated facts say that this was not being used as a barricade or a protective device.
No, that's right, Judge. And I don't even think you get that far. I think that a corporate policy should apply to the corporate employees in the same way that a personal lines policy applies to family members.
But what are the limits on that? If they're off going fishing on themselves and they get hit by a car, are they covered by corporate?
Great question. And I think you limit it to... as Ohio does. I was explaining about how Ohio handles the problem. They limit coverage to employees who are within the course and scope of their employment. It doesn't apply to folks who are off fishing or doing some recreational activity. At one point, Ohio had a case that said, exactly as you're suggesting, Judge Terry, they had this very broad interpretation, and they allowed employees who were not on the job to obtain UIM coverage from the employer. And they had a 2003 Supreme Court case that said, no, we're going to limit it, that UIM coverage, to employment-related activities. And I think that's a very simple and easy, that is such a great way to do it. It comports completely with D. Herrera. It's exactly as D. Herrera would expect. It's just like a personal lines policy. Just exactly like you say, in a personal lines policy, you say, well, it's the named insured and any resident family members. In a corporate policy, it's the named insured and any employees who are within the course and scope of their employment.
So you're asking us essentially to create a category of insureds that's not anywhere contained in this policy.
That's correct.
And what authority do we have to do that?
I think D. Herrera authorizes that. I think D. Herrera indicates that it can't limit this policy to folks who are occupying a vehicle. If I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
May I please support? I'm Brian Waters on behalf of Farmers Insurance Exchange, registration 24836. And to hear the family, and that's how I referred to the appellants in this case, to hear the family argue today, the court must wonder whether McMichael is good law, because the family has argued that D. Herrera controls all, that insurance is about the individual. It has nothing to do with the automobile, occupancy, use. It doesn't have anything to do with that. And yet McMichael is a use case. It's all about use and whether the vehicle was being used as a barricade. The court had to go through an entire analysis of that to get to whether he was an insured under the policy. And so what we hear today is apparently McMichael is bad law, and yet we all know that's not true. McMichael is good law. D. Herrera refers to McMichael throughout the opinion. And so I think that what we need to do is understand why McMichael is good law given D. Herrera. And the answer to that is simply there are two classes of insurance. There's a class one and a class two. D. Herrera dealt with class one insureds, named insureds, and resident relatives, whereas McMichael dealt with class two insureds, those occupying or using a motor vehicle. And the courts treat those classes of insureds very differently. And we learn about that in one of the cases that the family has cited, and that's the Briggs case, Briggs versus American Family. It's 209 P3rd 1181. And at page 1183 of that opinion, the court says, the Briggs court says, his policy provided UIM coverage for class one insureds, that is, persons named on the policy and their resident relatives, and class two insureds, that is, other persons permissively occupying an insured vehicle. Briggs goes on to say on the same page, for example, an insured might purchase UIM coverage on a single vehicle, which would nonetheless, by operation of law, that's D. Herrera, by operation of law, provide UIM coverage for class one insureds in any vehicle, and class two insureds in that single vehicle only. So making that distinction between class one and class two. Another
Where in the policy here is there a description of insureds as class one or class two? You've got a definition of insured if there's a corporation that says anyone using a covered automobile with permission. And if it's an individual, then it deals with something different. So we're dealing with a description of an insured. By the policy terms, doesn't say anything about class one or class two. Simply says a person occupying a covered vehicle.
Right, and we know from D. Herrera's treatment and the fact that McMichael exists that there is a distinction between types of insureds. And whether you call them class one, class two, or whether you call them a permanent insured and a transient insured, we know that there are, by the definitions, two different types of insureds. This case referred to it as class one and class two. What we've got is a class two insured, someone who's occupying the vehicle in the farmer's policy. And
but,
I make that
but your policy specifically says occupying a vehicle. And didn't D. Herrera invalidate vehicle occupancy requirements?
Absolutely not. It invalidated that occupancy requirement for class one insureds. And let me explain at least what I'm talking about in terms of the class one insured. That is a named insured and a resident relative. When you look at the definition of those types of insureds, there's nothing about occupancy within those definitions. A named insured is always an insured under the policy. There may be some exclusions, but he's always an insured under the policy. A resident relative, it's got nothing to do with an occupancy or use of a vehicle to be an insured. All you have to be is a resident and a relative. In that case, in D. Herrera, he was a son. He was therefore a resident relative. And so he got that permanency sort of coverage as an insured. His designation as an insured had nothing to do with use of a vehicle. And that's all that De Herrera was talking about. We've got the Supreme Court case of Benzin that helps us understand that a little bit more. It's 206 P3rd 812. And on page 816 of that opinion, now this is a case that dealt with class certification and decertification, how insurance companies dealt with the De Herrera issue. And there's a nugget in there about De Herrera. And the court, the Supreme Court here in this Benzin case says, De Herrera and Hymies, which is another related case, only require that the insurance and their resident family members, again, this is De Herrera, De Herrera and Hymies only require that the insurance, name insured, and their resident family members are covered on all vehicles after they purchase one policy with UM-UIM coverage. Purchasing UM-UIM coverage on additional vehicles extends UM-UIM protection to guests and non-resident relatives of the insureds traveling in the added vehicles. And so again, this Benzin court is helping us understand that De Herrera only relates to those class one insureds, those whose definition of insured is not dependent upon occupying a motor vehicle. If occupancy was required, McMichael would be a bad law. And yet we know De Herrera cites to McMichael throughout the opinion. And so why is McMichael good law? Because it deals with this class two insured. McMichael has the same exact policy provision as we have in the farmer's policy here.
But there's no dispute that the vehicle involved there was a covered vehicle.
Absolutely. And therein lies one distinction. First, we know that McMichael's good law. In other words, an insurance company such as Farmers can write a policy in a commercial context, just like McMichael, that defines an insured as someone occupying a vehicle. Now, McMichael changed
its view. That was before De Herrera, though. I mean, McMichael was 6 years before De Herrera, had no occasion to discuss whether the UIM coverage could be restricted, because that wasn't the question.
And yet nothing in De Herrera, De Herrera refers to McMichael over and over again, and nowhere in De Herrera does it talk about or discount the validity of McMichael. In fact, we've got the Benzin court that I cited that helps us understand that De Herrera only applied to this class one category of insurance, the named and resident relatives, that it had nothing to do with this other class of insurance that we have here, the class that requires occupancy in a motor vehicle. If we didn't have that, then Benzin would be wrong where it says purchasing UM-UIM additional vehicles extends the protection to guests and non-residents. It treats the guests and non-residents as different because it says they're only covered while traveling in occupancy, traveling in added vehicles. So the Benzin court is talking about De Herrera and letting us know that occupancy requirement for that class two, that different type of insured, still exists. And of course, Benzin is after De Herrera even.
You don't have a class one insured at all.
We have a class two, and that's what we deal with here. We don't.
The point, I guess, is that you have to be occupying a vehicle for there to be UIM coverage under this policy.
Absolutely. Now, McMichael went from occupancy to use and applied liability and had that little twist in there. But yes, you have to be occupying or using. And the public policy is different with respect to those that are other than named insureds and resident relatives. Again, McMichael is good law, and McMichael is our case. It was an employee, and the whole discussion was whether he was using the vehicle.
So under your analysis, then the president of this corporation, of Statewide, could be injured by an uninsured motor vehicle out on the street and would not be provided any kind of coverage whatsoever.
I think that's accurate. Under this policy definition, you have to be using a covered vehicle. What we know here is there are two pieces to that definition. You have to be using or occupying, and you have to be occupying a covered vehicle. It's undisputed we have no covered vehicle here. The 96 Ford F-150 was not covered. We have stipulated facts. It was not on the policy. It was bought after the policy. It was not added to the policy. So that's one trigger. It has to be a covered vehicle. And we don't have that here. We don't have occupancy either. We don't have use. We have those as stipulated facts of the trial court. And so we don't have covered vehicle, we don't have occupancy, we don't have use. There's no way to get to coverage as a Class 2 insured.
Why isn't the coverage illusory then? Because you've got no coverage essentially for all of the employees, regardless of where they are, unless they're actually in a vehicle. So all you're getting is Class 2 coverage, when in fact all the other cases, including Benzing, say what you're really purchasing is coverage for Class 1, and you can pay a higher premium for Class 2. But you're saying you don't even have a Class 1 insured here. So why isn't the coverage illusory?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the distinction is between a personal lines policy and a commercial policy. In a personal lines policy, there's a named insured, an individual named insured, and there's resident relatives that are their Class 1 insureds. In this commercial policy, we do have two separate types of definitions, depending on whether the person buying coverage is an individual or whether it's a corporation. In the instance of a corporation, there is coverage for the corporation and those using or occupying a covered vehicle. You're not going to buy, let's say you have a corporation and it has 1,000 employees, four of those drive. What the court, I think, would suggest with the question is that all of those employees have to be covered all of the time, no matter what they're doing. They're shopping at Kmart, they're off on work, they're doing whatever they're doing. But a corporation is not required to buy UIM coverage. UIM coverage is not mandatory, an offer is mandatory. And coverage for those Class 2s is not mandatory, that we learned from Benzing and by implication from D. Herrera.
Well, in this situation where the insured is a corporation that cannot sustain bodily injury, you're never going to have the corporation be able to make a UIM claim, correct?
The corporation can't for bodily injury. The court is correct there. But individuals who are occupying vehicles at the time of an accident do get coverage. There is coverage there. It's not illusory. There are situations under which that coverage is triggered. And those are the times when a corporation might most want that sort of coverage. The corporation can decide whether it wants to buy extra coverage or less coverage, depending on what's offered and what's available. But again, UIM coverage is not a mandatory coverage that you have to buy. And on Benzing, we understand that folks don't buy that coverage for their guests, for those occupying vehicles. And so there's a significantly different public policy associated with people who are in that category of occupying a motor vehicle, as opposed to in a personal lines policy, the named insured and the resident relative. And so there's a different public policy as to why those folks are covered. We know that that sort of definition is available, is fine in Colorado from the UIM Act itself. I mean, 10.4609 is the Underinsured Motorist Act. It pulls its definition of insured from 10.4601, right? And in subsection 5 of that defines insured. And one of the definitions of an insured is anyone occupying permissively or using with permission described a motor vehicle. And a described motor vehicle is further defined as one that's described in the policy. So we know the definition is fine, that an insurer can use that. That's a current definition. That's the same policy definition that we've got in McMichael, which is the same one that we've got in Farmers. And so it's a valid definition. There's nothing about the classification of occupancy of a vehicle or use of a covered vehicle that makes this somehow illusory coverage or an inappropriate way to define an insured in Colorado. That's what Farmers did. We know from the stipulated facts that this truck was not a covered vehicle and that in any event, Mr. Knave was not using or occupying the vehicle. And so he fits within that definition in the policy, which again is the same definition in McMichael, which tracks the definition at 10.4601. And so for all of those reasons, we ask that the court affirm the trial court's grant of summary judgment.
Judge Casewell, you have zeroed in on exactly the point I was trying to make, and that is that there's no way to obtain coverage under this policy unless you're occupying a vehicle. And I believe that that's void pursuant to D. Herrera and the public policy expressed in D. Herrera.
What do you do about the language saying that it relates to Class 1 insurance as opposed to others?
Well, Benzinga was quite a bit different facts pattern. That was essentially a class action brought against the carrier for failure to offer. And so I think that's really dicta, and I'm not sure that that applies to what I'm trying to get at here. This is an occupancy restriction, plain and simple. After D. Herrera, I think Farmers knows that they can no longer write the policy the way they used to. He used to, of course, say you have to, in order to obtain UIM coverage, you have to occupy a covered vehicle. And so now what they've done is they've just put one additional step in there. They've said that in order to obtain UIM coverage, you have to be an insured, and an insured is somebody occupying a covered vehicle. So the result is exactly the same.
The argument seems to be that in a personal lines context, each of us is expected to be able to make the decision whether we want UIM coverage or not. And in a commercial context, the corporation doesn't want to pay the premium for each of its employees. It wants to pay a premium only for those who use that particular vehicle. Now, what's wrong with that? Why is that against public policy if, in fact, there's already offers made to Mr. Naive, for example, to have his own UIM coverage, which he may or may not even have had?
Well, the distinction there, I think, is that the premium has been paid, and it's paid for UIM coverage. You saw in the Bernal case where exactly the point you're bringing up, where I believe it was Pepsi, tried to waive UIM coverage on one of their Pepsi trucks, and they said. They said that we'll have liability coverage on this Pepsi truck, but we don't need UIM coverage. And I think that that's an extremely interesting case because it has some language, and I was going to try to get around to it, but it says, this is from the Bernal case, it says, in our view, D. Herrera enunciates a public policy beyond the court's previous mandatory offer interpretation that voids all types of vehicle restrictions on UIM coverage. And I think that's exactly what we have here. We have a carrier just trying to shift this occupancy requirement. They're using occupancy to define an insured and therefore define who's covered. Thank you very much for your time today.
Gentlemen, for your arguments this afternoon, the case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.